chancy job. And it makes a man watchful. And a little lonely.
Come on in for an evening of poems and stories about the American West. A land of legend, of romance, of friendship and courage. A motherlode of remembrance. A true showcase of the Old West with the old cowboy, J.C. Hulsey.
Howdy, folks. Welcome. I'm the old cowboy, and you're in for another treat today because we got another great show for you. So come on in and gather around for some rootin' tootin' cowboy fun. As usual, I got something bottled up inside me that I just gotta turn it loose. What is it about money that makes a person change? I know the Bible tells us that the love of money is the root of all evil. I've watched as many folks' personality has completely changed. Why did this happen, I ask? These folks have everything going for them. They've got a family, a home, all the necessary things a person needs in this life. Maybe it's because they quit giving thanks for what they have and covet more. They now want things of being satisfied with what they have. I think when a person starts wanting more money than they need, they begin to get into trouble. Marriages have been destroyed because of money. Personal lives have been destroyed because of money. The list goes on and on about people and things that have been destroyed because of money. Yet it's not money in itself that causes this destruction. It's the love, it's the wanting of more that does these awful things. And I suppose I'm as guilty as many when it comes to the subject of money. But I'd like to think that I've mellowed out in my old age about the importance of money. You might ask, why am I carrying on so much about this subject? It's because I see it almost every day with authors. I visit with authors, and they tell me they write for the pleasure of writing, for the satisfaction it gives them. They say they aren't writing for money. Then they collect a little bit of royalty on their book, and something changes. They want more, and then they want more. Now they're in a frenzy because they can't get enough. Where's that person that was writing for the pleasure and the satisfaction? Where's that person gone? I've seen so many authors get so discouraged because of the money part of it that they quit writing completely. That makes me sad. I feel very strongly about what I'm fixing to say next. I feel that God has given you, the author, a gift to share with others. You'll never be satisfied until you do what you're supposed to do with your gift. If you're one of those folks who've let money or the love of money get in the way of you sharing your gift, it's not too late to change. Go back in time. Relive that glorious feeling you had when you held your first published book in your hand. You weren't thinking about how much money you was going to get out of it. You was just thankful, and you had a certain satisfaction of a job being completed. Let's all remember the reason that we became authors. Now let's listen to a song by Jamie Richards. He's telling us, "Don't try to find me."
Got to save my sanity. So listen, girl, whatever you do, don't try to find me. At the Holiday Inn in Dallas, one-off LBJ, you can see the sign from the freeway, exit 19A. At the end of the hall on the top floor, overlooking the pool 304, that's probably where I'm gonna be. Don't try to find me. I won't be there long, I'll just pass through. I'll leave Dallas in a day or two. Might catch a rodeo, look up a friend I know. But after that I'm on the move. Don't try to find me. At my house in Houston, just off Wayside Drive, at the high school hangaround, the last one on the left-hand side. There's a fence with a rusty old gate, broken mailbox 108. That's probably where I'm gonna be. Don't try to find me. Me. At the Holiday Inn in Dallas, one off LBJ, you can see the sign from the freeway, exit 19A. At the end of the hall on the top floor, overlooking the pool 304. If I'm not there, I'll probably be at my mama's house in Houston, just off Wayside Drive, at the high school hangaround, last one on the left-hand side. There's a fence with a rusty old gate, broken mailbox 108. That's probably where I'm gonna be. Don't try to find me.
Between 1859 and 1871, five brothers were born. Frank Grattan, nicknamed Gratt, William Bob, and Emmett Dalton was born. Their parents were Lewis and Adeline Dalton from Jackson County, Missouri. Mr. Dalton was a saloon keeper in Kansas City, Missouri, when he married Adeline Younger. She was an aunt of Cole and Jim Younger. By 1882, the family was living in the Indian Territory, Oklahoma. A few years later, they had settled in Coffeyville in southeastern Kansas. Frank Dalton was the oldest and kept his brothers on their good behavior for some time as they followed his model into the law. He became a deputy U.S. Marshal, and his brothers rode with him in posses. Frank was killed when he was tracking a horse thief in the Oklahoma Territory. Brothers Gratt, Bob, and Emmett Dalton also became lawmen. Frontier conditions for towns was often strained in 1890. After not being paid money owed to them, the brothers became outlaws. Bob Dalton had killed his first man at age 19. He was a deputy U.S. Marshal at the time and stated that the killing was in the line of duty. However, others noted that the dead man had been Dalton's rival for a woman. In March 1890, Bob Dalton was charged with bringing forbidden liquor into the Indian Territory. He jumped bail and didn't appear for his trial. In September 1890, Gratt was arrested for stealing horses, a capital offense. But either the charges were dropped or he was released. Discredited as lawmen, the Daltons soon formed their first gang. Bob recruited George Bitter Creek Newcomb, Charlie Pierce, and black-faced Charlie Bryant to ride with him and his brother Emmett. Gratt was visiting his brother, Bill, in California when the gang was formed, but he joined later, as did Bill Dolan, Dick Broadwell, and Bill Power. Their first robbery target was a gambling house in Silver City, New Mexico. On February 6, 1891, after Gratt Dalton had joined his brothers in California, a Southern Pacific Railroad passenger train was held up in the town of Alia. The Daltons were accused of the robbery based on little evidence. Gratt escaped, and Bill was acquitted. But Gratt was arrested, convicted, and given a 20-year prison sentence. According to one account, Gratt was handcuffed to one deputy and accompanied by another while being transferred by train. After the train had gone some distance, one deputy fell asleep, and the other was talking to other passengers. Gratt jumped up and dived headfirst out the train window. He landed in the San Joaquin River, disappearing underwater, and was carried downstream by the current. Gratt found his brothers, and they made their way back to Oklahoma Territory. Between May 1891 and July 1892, the Dalton brothers robbed four more trains in the Indian Territory. However, they only gained several hundred dollars. but they had worked well as a team. As they passed Orlando, they stole 8 or 9 horses. A posse chased them, but they escaped. 4 months later, the Dalton gang robbed several more trains, getting but a few $100 and some watches and jewelry from the passengers. Bob Dalton had ambitions. He would, he claimed, beat anything Jesse James ever did, like rob 2 banks at once in broad daylight. On October the 5th, 1892, the Dalton gang attempted this feat when they set out to rob the C.M. Condon & Company's bank and the First National Bank on opposite sides of the street in Coffeyville, Kansas. They wore fake beards, but one of the townspeople happened to recognize them. An employee of one of the banks delayed him by convincing him that the safe was on a time lock and couldn't be opened for another 45 minutes. With that delay, word got out that the bank was being robbed, and residents armed themselves and prepared for a gun battle. When the gang left the banks, a shootout began. 3 townspeople were shot, and Town Marshal Charles Conley was killed when he ran into the street after hearing the gunfire. Grant and Bob Dalton, Dick Broadwell, and Bill Power were all killed. Emmett Dalton received 23 gunshot wounds but survived. He was given a life sentence in the Kansas Penitentiary in Lansing, Kansas, of which he served 14 years before being pardoned. He then moved to California and became a real estate agent, an author, and an actor. He died in 1937 at age 66. Here's Ken Lemon, living in a house full of love.
All my life my heart's been walked on. Women said they loved me and my heart they talked on. Telling me lies and I'm filling my eyes with tears that I couldn't control. Couldn't get a hold of myself long enough to realize they're only trying to pull the wool over my eyes. Then I found you and my skies turned blue. Living in a house full of love. Now love is born through the windows, coming in the doors. I can feel it creeping through the cracks in the floors, bouncing off the walls and the ceiling up above. Since I found you, I'm living in a house full of love. Once I lived in a hole like a rabbit. I couldn't find love and the blues were a habit. A lonely man and I couldn't understand why everything I tried went wrong. Then you came along, bless your heart, showed me the right way, dried my eyes and turned my nights to day. And I'm so proud I'm gonna holler out loud, tell the world about my house full of love. Now love is born through the windows, coming in the doors. I can feel it creeping through the cracks in the floors, bouncing up the walls and the ceiling up above. Since I found you, I'm living in a house full of love. Once I lived in a hole like a rabbit. I couldn't find love and the blues were a habit. A lonely man and I couldn't understand why everything I tried went wrong. Then you came along, bless your heart, showed me the right way, dried my eyes and turned my night to day. And I'm so proud I'm gonna holler out loud, tell the world about my house full of love. Now love is born through the window, coming in the doors. I can feel it creeping through the cracks in the floors, bouncing up the wall and the ceiling up above. Since I found you, I'm living in a house full of love. Now love is born through the windows, coming in the doors. I can feel it creeping through the cracks in the floors, bouncing up the walls and the ceiling up above. Since I found you, I'm living in a house full of love.
Now I think we need to visit with our guest. We want to welcome to the Wild West Showdown today, songster Andy Hedges. Welcome, Andy.
Thanks, JC. Thanks for having me.
Tell us what a songster is, if you would.
Songster, that's kind of an old term from back in the 20s and 30s when folks were first recording music that they would give to a fella who played a lot of different kinds of song and was not necessarily known for writing his own songs, but was known for having a great repertoire of all different kinds of songs and maybe not even a specific style, but someone who could play in many different styles and genres. Of course, that was in the days before they had really divided music up clearly into genres, but it kind of conjures up the idea of a solo performer who is able to play a lot of traditional songs and who has his own versions of songs that are unique to him and is also playing in a variety of styles. And I've been inspired by that idea for many years, and so I try to emulate that in what I do with my music.
Sounds like just another name for a singer.
You could say that. It's a word for a singer. But you see it used more in those old-time singers. They would often be called songsters, or they might be called musicianers. And so I love that old lingo and
sure, and
love that old music.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were born, where you grew up, and where you're living now.
Well, I live in Lubbock, Texas, which is where I was born, but I grew up in a little place about 60 miles southwest of Lubbock called Tokio, T-O-K-I-O. And my dad was a Primitive Baptist pastor back in those days. In fact, he still is, but was a pastor in a small church, and he found a place where we could live and pay for rent by looking after a few cows. And that was a pretty big influence on me living out there, you know, being in the country and growing up around cows and horses a little bit, but especially the music that I heard, because my dad, before he became a pastor, had rode bulls in college rodeos and kind of had a love for all things to do with the West and cowboys. And he would play music that he liked, and it would be things like Marty Robbins, gunfighter ballads and trail songs, mm-hmm. and Sons of the Pioneers and Tex Ritter and Jimmy Rogers and Johnny Horton, things like that. And I loved that music as a kid, and so that made a pretty big impression on me and kind of set the stage for me to fall in love with the music and poetry that I perform today.
He had good taste, didn't he?
He did.
Okay, you were raised in a Baptist church. Did you ever consider following in your daddy's footsteps as a preacher, pastor?
No, that was just never really my thing. You know, I have an older brother who is a pastor now, so he followed my father in that way. But I wasn't ever drawn to that. If I was going to get up in front of people, I was more into singing to them and entertaining them.
Are you married? Do you have kids?
I am married, have a beautiful wife and three beautiful kids, one girl and two boys. So,
how old are they?
5 and just nearly 3, and then 4 months. So we have our hands full.
Do any of these youngsters want to follow in daddy's footsteps as a singer?
Well, yeah, they do. You know, the two older ones, they'd love to sing, and I guess it's a little early now to tell if they'll play anything, but
sure.
They have play guitars and ukuleles, and about every time I pick up my guitar to practice or something in the living room, they run and grab theirs and are right there with me, so they enjoy it a lot, and we sing and play a lot of music around the house. So who knows, maybe they'll carry it on.
How does your family and friends feel about you doing this?
Oh, everybody's always been just very supportive and encouraging. I've been blessed with great people in my life who have given me a lot of opportunities and just been encouraging and kind, and early on, really good friends and family who had put up with my practicing and asked me to perform for their friends. And so if it wasn't for my friends and family, you know, I never would have got into this stuff and as a performer, because they really gave me the first opportunity back in those early days, just performing at family reunions or for little friendly gatherings and things like that. So that's kind of how I got my start.
Do you do this for a living, or do you have a regular job?
It definitely supplements my income, but I have a day job, something I've done for a long time. Me and my dad actually work together. My dad has a crop insurance business in Brownfield, Texas, so I work with him in that little agency. It's just kind of a small business. Me and him are the only employees, and we work here in a small town, mostly just insure farmers here in this county.
You sing other people's songs. Do you write any of your own?
I've written a song or two and poem here and there, but that's not really my thing. I admire songwriters a great deal, and I'm a big fan of some songwriters, people like Bob Dylan and my friend Andy Wilkinson and others. But I've always been more drawn to interpreting songs, and especially old songs, and I really enjoy the process of digging up these old songs that folks haven't heard in a while and that maybe somewhat forgotten, and working up a new arrangement. Now, I may rewrite an old song. I'll sometimes set a poem to music, or I'll write some new lyrics to an old song to kind of make it my own and make it work for me. But I'm much more interested in that process than I am in writing brand new material.
How much traveling do you do?
It kind of varies. It's sporadic. I've got a lot of traveling coming up in the coming month. I'll be in Elko, Nevada at the National Cowboy Poetry Gathering the first weekend in February. And then I'll also be in Alpine, Texas for the Texas Cowboy Poetry Gathering at the end of February. And in April, I'll be heading out to California for the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. And then have a few smaller stops in between those shows. But sometimes I'll have a month or two where I don't get far from home. So, you know, I just travel when the work comes in, and I'm always excited about it.
Have you received any awards at any of these poetry events that you travel to?
Yeah, I have received some awards. I guess the one I'm probably most proud of is I received a Wrangler Award from the National Cowboy Western Heritage Museum, Cowboy Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City back in 2009 or 10, I guess that was. Me and Andy Wilkinson had recorded a record together and won the Outstanding Traditional Western Album of the Year. So that was a pretty big thrill to get that.
Sounds like a pretty important award. Do you have a favorite singer, favorite songwriter, or poet?
I'd be hard-pressed to pick a favorite, but a couple people that have been a big influence on me and that I really look up to and admire would be Ramblin' Jack Elliott and Don Edwards. In my opinion, those two guys are certainly the two greatest living cowboy singers, and I've learned a lot of my songs over the years from listening to their records and really kind of learned how to do what I do. I mean, you know, I can't do it like either one of them. Nobody does it better than Jack and Don, so those would be two of my big influences.
You dress like a cowboy. Do you live the cowboy lifestyle?
No, and I'm not a working cowboy, and never have been really. You know, I mentioned I grew up out in the country and around cows and horses a little bit, but I never have earned my living as a cowboy. I've always approached this and been real upfront about it, that I'm somewhat of an outsider in that respect, and approach it much more as a folklorist or someone who's just interested in the history and the songs and kind of researching that stuff. But, yeah, I don't make any claims to being a cowboy.
Do you wear boots?
You bet. I do live in Texas. You have to remember that.
Do you wear boots even when you dress up fancy?
You know, I wear boots just about every day, no matter what I'm doing.
You know, living in Texas, wearing boots, wearing a cowboy hat, sounds like you're pretty close to being a cowboy, even though it might be a drugstore cowboy.
Some people would say that. The cowboy, that's a term that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But in the work that I do in my music and poetry, I'm really interested in the working ranch cowboy. And that's really where a lot of these songs and poems that I perform come from. And I have the utmost respect for those fellas who make their living from the back of a horse. I hope what I do entertains and honors those guys, but I wouldn't want to take the term cowboy lightly and claim to be something that I'm not.
You mentioned that you do the older songs. What's the difference between the older songs, or what do you feel the difference is between the older songs and the songs of today?
Those older songs have a special quality about them, and I think one reason for that is many of these old songs, the songwriter has long been forgotten, and they've been passed down from generation to generation, some of them hundreds of years old. And over the years, the words change some and the melodies change some, but there's something special about these songs because these are the ones that folks thought were good enough and important enough to keep singing and to pass down to their kids and grandkids, and you don't get that kind of quality of a song today. But there's certainly great songwriters today, and I'm a big fan of a lot of folk writing songs today that certainly write beautiful songs, but there's just something about those old ones that I'm really attracted to.
Do you have any CDs if somebody wanted to get some of your songs?
I've got a number of CDs, several albums available on CD, and they're out there on iTunes and all of those places where folks buy music or listen to music these days.
How many CDs would you say you've recorded?
You know, I'd have to sit down and count, but I would imagine I've made about 9 or 10 albums over the years.
You also have your own radio show, is that correct?
Well, I do. Yeah, it's a podcast that I just launched this month called Cowboy Crossroads. I interview a different guest, kind of like you do on your show, I suppose, and pretty excited about getting that out there. I just released my second episode, came out today.
How can folks get in touch with you? Are you on Facebook, Twitter, all the social media sites?
Yeah, you can find me on all that stuff. You know, the easiest way to find me is my website, which is andyhedges.com. That's got all the links to my music and the podcast and how to reach out to me through email and social media.
And that's where folks would be able to buy a couple of your CDs if they wanted to?
Yep, you bet. AndyHedges.com.
What can folks expect from Andy Hedges in the near future?
I just launched this podcast, and so I'll be releasing a new episode about one a month in this coming year. And so be on the lookout for that. Also just released a brand new CD of cowboy poetry recitations. It's actually titled Cowboy Recitations. That's something that's available. And of course, I'll be out on the road playing songs and reciting poems at some of the usual places.
Okay, that website is andyhedges.com. They can get your CDs there. They can see your schedule there. Also, we need a link for your podcast.
Well, that's on the website, but it's andyhedges.com/cowboycrossroads.
Andy, we're so glad you came to visit with us today, and I want to give you an invite to come back anytime you want to.
Well, thanks, JC. I appreciate you having me and looking forward to visiting again in the future. Appreciate you doing what you do with your show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
This young lady we're going to listen to now is doing something that I just can't understand how a person's throat can do it. Let's listen to Lili Robert, Scat Yodel.
To the Chemo Theater in Albuquerque for the Western Music Awards. The cowboys and cowgirls climbed the bus as the driver shouted all aboard. How was I to know that the status quo would be changing for me right inside? I sat in front of the queen of yodel named Janet McBride. I said, oh, 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 Miss Janet, I sure wish I could yodel like you. She said, oh, 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 oh. Sing I, 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 O, I, 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 O. It's really very simple, don't you know? Well, I confess to Miss Janet, all I'd ever learned to do was my scout singing cowgirl jazz. But I'm do it up, do it up. She said, why don't you combine them and create some brand new? And I found my scat singing yodel, 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 yodel. Oh, do the scat yodel, 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 yodel. Scat yodel is on the page and it works very well for me. You take a yodel, 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 combine it with the bop, shit up and do it, daddy. Well, it's contagious, yodel, yodel, and outrageous, but I'm dab and do it. Life can change when you ride the range of a bigger part of you. Oh, you'll do the scat yodel.
Wasn't she something special? How about listening to Chad Prather's thought for the day?
I'm smiling just to keep from crying. I'm not happy. I'm frustrated. I'm losing my mind. I got to keep smiling just to keep from losing it. You know, why is it that when you call a company and you need to talk to a customer service representative, they put you on hold and you have to hear the horrible music, the hold music, hold music? Earmuff it, mama. Close your ears. Hold music sucks. Imagine training your whole life to be a musician. You get an opportunity to go into the studio and to create music only to find out while you're there, oh, this 30-minute song that you've been playing is going to be used as hold music. And we're going to run it through a speaker that can't handle it. So there's going to be a lot of crackles, hisses, and pops. And the person's going to be bombarded with a cacophony of sounds until they hang up. You over there, could you rub a little more oboe into the song? Yeah. A little more of the out-of-tune violin. Come on. Play me some classic rock. I want Steve Miller. This stuff is horrible. Hold music is to music what Velveeta is to cheese. It's absolutely horrible. Now I got to call him back. I couldn't take any more. I love y'all. God bless.
Now I reckon it's time for some cowboy wisdom. It don't matter how slow you go, just as long as you don't stop. This is the old cowboy saying, adios and happy trails.
Come on back next week to the Wild West Showdown with the old cowboy J.C. Holsey.